We know that we are all at different stages of spiritual growth. God is working with each one of us. As was mentioned in the first message, how we all start at different places, and God has certain times in our lives, times when He's going to prepare us to accept new pieces of truth. He works with each one of us. He gives us encouragement. He challenges us. He challenges us. He shows us areas of our character that need to be conformed to His mind. Because again, as long as we are alive, we're not going to be there, but we need to be approaching that. And He is faithful to keep bringing us along as long as we keep following His lead. If you've ever seen the old Cecil B. DeMille Ten Commandments, the movie, and you know all of the miracles contained in the plagues and in various parts of the story of the exodus of Israel out of Egypt. All these miracles, and I like the definition of a miracle that I heard a while back. A person said that all a miracle is just when God temporarily suspends the laws of physics. He just temporarily puts those out of reach. And so in my mind, I'm picturing when Israel's walking through the Red Sea, and basically it's the hands of God holding back the water on either side. And we read that not only was the water kept away, but they were able to walk through on dry land, on dry ground. Their feet didn't even get wet. We all know what happened when God took His hands away. God took His hands away, and what happened? Well, physics took their place again. The water came roaring in. Why? Well, it's said that nature abhors a vacuum. You can't simply, unless there's a miracle going on, you can't simply have that vacuum of the water pressure coming in and nothing much holding it back. That water came plunging down, tumbling down. And there's a similarity in the Christian development. As we grow, as we read the biblical instructions, will the biblical instructions say, cease from doing this? Okay, stop doing this. This needs to not be part of your life. Various things, various parts, as God again shows us in our own time, in what He knows is the right time for us, from Scripture or from personal examples around us. So there's instructions on the one hand that say you need to not be doing these things, and there's companion scriptures that also speak to how we should replace those former practices. We can't just leave that vacuum there. And so the title of this message is Filling the Vacuum. Let's go ahead and turn back to Exodus chapter 20. Israel had been enslaved for generations. And in Exodus 20, of course, God begins to try to teach them. They've been steeped in paganism for generations. They've pretty much forgotten everything that they knew, everything that had been part of their generations back, the practices. And in Exodus chapter 20, God begins to reveal to them, begins. This is not the entire revelation of what is expected when we follow God, but it's a beginning point. It's a beginning point. It was a beginning point for them. It's a beginning point for all people whom God is calling. So the first point that I'd like to speak on briefly is that God calls us and leads us out of sin, just like He did with ancient Israel. My first point is that God calls us the same way and leads us out of sin. And again, in some passages, coming out of Egypt is again likened to coming out of sin. I won't read through all of the Ten Commandments, but one thing that strikes a person as they read the Ten Commandments is that almost all of them are prohibiting something. In one sense, they're negative. They're saying, don't do this. Almost all of them. That's not true of the command to honor your father and mother. That is stated in a positive way. Do this, as opposed to a negative way. Stop doing that. And then the Sabbath command is somewhat of a mixture. It starts out being as a command to do something. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And then it goes on to prohibit some activities. So again, this is how God begins to work with people. He calls us where we are. Again, these people, these Israelites, they would have been those people that we were hearing about in the first message. They would have been smoking. They would have had idols in their luggage. They would have all sorts of personal sins. And God was going to get around to telling them about them. So again, God calls us much the same way and leads us out of sin. When we're first called, when we first begin to know God's truth, our most immediate need is to stop breaking God's law, is to break that cycle, break the cycle of sin. A second point that I wanted to bring out is that obedience to God's law is required. We can read in many places, of course, in this world, you'll get an argument about that a lot of places you go. Is God's law required? No, it was done away with. No, it doesn't matter. Jesus fulfilled it. You could probably tell me 15 different arguments that you've heard, that you've read, proposing that, no, the law, it's not binding on us anymore. Let's turn to 1 John chapter 2. In 1 John chapter 2, and looking at verse 3, it says, this is how we know that we know him. Or this is how we show that we know him. And of course, the only people who know God are the people whom God has called and with whom he is working. So in verse 3 it says, hereby do we know that we know him if we keep his commandments. If anybody says, I know God, but says the commandments are done away with. Verse 4 says that person is a liar and doesn't have the truth. They may be very well intentioned, they may think they understand, they may think they know, but they do not know the truth. The truth is not in him. Verse 5 it says, but whoever keeps God's word, in him the love of God is truly being perfected. And again it says, this is how we know that we are in him. He that says he abides in him ought to walk even as he walked. And we have chapters and chapters and books describing how Jesus walked when he was on this earth, how he behaved, what he didn't do, what he did do. But again, God is leading us to that perfection, as it says in verse 5. Again, that word means maturity, to reach the full level of growth, like a full-term pregnancy. God is growing children, and we need to be maturing, coming to full term. A third point, then, is that law-keeping is not the only thing that's required. A third point is keeping the law enough? Well, no. And when I say the law, I mean the Ten Commandments. They are required, but are they enough? If you will please turn to Mark chapter 10 and verse 17. Mark chapter 10, verse 17. It says, when he was gone forth into the way, a person came running and kneeled in front of him and asked him, good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life? And Jesus said unto him, why are you calling me good? There's no one good but one, that is God. But in verse 19, he answers the young man's question. He says, you know the commandments, and he mentions several of them. Do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal. Do not be an untrue witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and your mother. And in verse 20, the young man answered and said unto him, well, master, I've known these things since I was a kid. I've been following these guidelines my entire life. Then Jesus looked at him with love, and said unto him, here's the thing you're missing. So this person was keeping the commandments, he was keeping the letter, he was doing much of what was necessary. But Jesus told him, you just lack one thing. Go sell what you have, give the money to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven, and come and take up the cross. So to give up this life of comfort and ease, because this young man, it says, had quite a bit of wealth, and come and live this life of service. Give your life. When he says, take up your cross and follow me, he's basically saying, give your life to be spent, as Peter said he was doing with his life. So we know that keeping the commandments is important. It is required, but it's not the entire story. In Romans chapter 2 and verse 17, Jesus was dealing with some men who thought they had it made. In chapter 2 and verse 17, he says, behold, you're called a Jew, and you rest, in my King James, it says, you rest in the law, meaning you think that you've got it made because you haven't actually murdered anybody yet, you haven't actually committed adultery, it says, you rest in the law. They thought that was all they needed to do. It says, you make your boast of God. They brag, well, I know God. I know God's law. I've known about him all my life. And we can get into that same mindset if we're not careful in terms of, well, I was raised in the church and I've been hearing all these messages all my life, and they've changed in minor ways in terms of our understanding. But I have known this stuff all my life. We have to avoid that sort of cockiness, because we have to be trusting in God. Salvation comes from God, not from the law, not from keeping the law perfectly. In verse 18, Jesus said, you think that you know his will because you've been instructed out of the law, and you are confident that you yourself are a guide to those who don't know and a light to those who are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes. So again, they thought of themselves as way up here and the little people. But in verse 21, he goes on to basically condemn their actions. They're teaching one thing, but they're doing another thing. And in verse 23, he says, you who have been thinking that you're keeping the law perfectly, but are actually breaking the law and bringing dishonor on God. So again, they kept a lot of the minute articles of the law, and yet Jesus said that they were bringing dishonor to the name of God because they were out there saying, I know God. And then they were doing these things. And so, well, the natural thing is if the person doing the action is doing terrible things and he's claiming to have God's authority to do it, that millstone that we heard mentioned in the first message comes to mind. Turn to Matthew chapter 5, please. Jesus trying to put to rest the notion that he came to do away with the law. No, the law isn't required anymore. In chapter 5 and verse 17, he says, do not think that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets, by which he meant the books of Moses, the Old Testament writings, the books of prophecy, and the books of the law. That was the Old Testament at that time. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill or to magnify. I'm come to show you what they mean besides the specific words. And of course, we've rehearsed many of these things. He says in verse 18 that not one single stroke of the pen, not one dot of the I, not one cross of the T will cease to be law until all that it was for has been fulfilled. So again, the law is in force. But in verse 21, he says, it goes beyond don't kill. It goes beyond do not kill. In verse 22, he says that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, you know, basically saying, you're a worthless person, shall be in danger of the council or in danger of the third resurrection. And in verse 27, again, he says, you already know the commandment, do not commit adultery, but of course he expanded on it. He came to reveal it in a more full sense when he says in verse 28 that if you just look on a woman to lust after her, you have committed adultery already in your heart. So again, the keeping of the letter of the law, that's required, but it's not enough. And a few pages further in Matthew chapter 22, these two great commands that Jesus mentions. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 34. Now these two commandments are, again, what I would call positive. They're not a prohibition. They're not a make sure you're not doing this thing. They're on the positive side. Again, it's that vacuum. You were taking out this. Okay, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. This is wrong. I need to take this out of my life. Something's going to take that place in your life. Something's going to take up that time I used to spend watching whatever kind of movies I've had to take out of my life, or watching whatever TV shows, or reading what kind of novels, or however it was that I spent my time, when I take that activity out of my life, that time is going to be filled somehow. And so in Matthew chapter 22, he gives us some positive commands. Do these things. So in verse 34, he had been, some Pharisees and such had been trying to trip him up, trying to get the best of him in a debate sort of a situation. And in verse 34, we read that when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, you know, he just defeated their arguments so bad they didn't want to say another word because they were not earning any points, so to speak. So the Pharisees were gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked Jesus a question to test him, to try to again trip him up. He said in verse 36, Master, which is the greatest commandment of the law? And so Jesus said unto him, you need to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. So again, that's part of what's going into that hole that's created as you and I start pulling things out of our life that aren't acceptable to God. This is one of those things that we need to put into that vacuum, into that hole, to fill it up. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And verse 39, he says, the second is very similar. Love your neighbor as yourself. So again, a positive, a do this, not a commandment of stop doing that, stop doing that. And again, this is doesn't mean sit there and think happy thoughts about your neighbor and some sort of internal dialogue. Loving your neighbor as yourself is an active thing. For instance, if you're able to come to the service project that was mentioned in the announcements, loving your neighbor is an active thing. But you might ask yourself, well, how can I do this? Well, again, we are all at different places in our spiritual walk. Every one of us needs to follow God's lead in as he leads us to see sins in ourselves. We have to ask him for his help. Please show me where I need to throw things out of my life. Please show me things that I need to add in to fill that vacuum that's left. And of course, we need to put on the attributes of having a giving attitude and a giving way of life, in serving, in helping, in showing love. Again, not some kind of love that's just in our heads, but showing love, actions that show love. So my fourth point, the point that I'm leading up towards, is that in addition to putting sin out of our lives, we need to be putting in those righteous deeds. We need to be putting on the righteousness that Jesus Christ showed in his example, we need to be asking him for his help in doing that. I'd like you to please turn to Matthew chapter 25. We've read this parable. Likely you've read this parable many times. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 24, the parable of the talents or of the minas. Matthew 25, verse 24. And we'll skip to the servant who didn't do what would have pleased his master. In verse 24, we read that he who had received the one talent came and said, "Lord, I knew that you're a hard man. You're an austere man," it says in some versions. "Reaping where you haven't sown, gathering where you haven't laid down seed. And I was afraid, and I went and I hid my talent in the earth." So, what did this man do? What did this man not do? He didn't take it and treat it like it was his own money. He didn't treat it like the prodigal son did. He didn't go out and take it to the market and live high on the hog. He didn't take it out and live a riotous, drunken life. He didn't steal it. He didn't throw it away or again, waste it by spending it on himself. But his attitude in verse 24, he saw this as a trial. His master came and gave him a talent and said, "Go and do business until I return." And he saw it as a trial. He's like, "Man, this guy is hard. This guy is always wanting us to produce something. He doesn't tell us how." He just saw it as a trial. When really what it was an opportunity. This servant, all of the servants in this parable were given an opportunity. The one who got the 10 talents saw it as an opportunity. And he jumped in. And he went out and he did business and he transacted and he gained 100% on the investment. And the one with the 5 or the 2 talents did likewise. He saw it as an opportunity. He wanted to please his master. He saw this as, this is a big responsibility. You know how much a talent of money is? It's a lot of money. And he's given it to me to take care of. He must have some trust in me. But this servant, again, didn't see an opportunity, didn't see, wow, here's a way that I can please my master, please my Lord. He saw it as a burden. Well, now what does he want me to do? Right? Saw it as a trial. Well, you and I are given opportunities also. You and I are given gifts in terms of whatever different areas of gifts. And God wants us to take those gifts and serve others. We're given opportunities to try things sometimes that are intimidating or some things that put us out of our comfort zone. But we need to look at them as opportunities, not as trials, like this man did here. He looked at it as though it was a burden. He looked at it as though this is just something else for me to mess up on and get in trouble for. And in verse 29... Well, in verse 28, the master instructs his other servants to take the talent from that man and give it to the servant who had produced the most fruit. "For unto everyone that has, more shall be given, and he will have abundance. But from him that doesn't produce any fruit shall be taken away," that's what that he does have. And you and I are going to fall into one of those categories. You and I are going to fall into this one or into this one. We're either going to be judged to have produced the kind of fruit that God's looking for, or it's going to be judged that we did not produce that fruit. So again, the master in verse 29 said, "Well, take it and give it to the one who was willing to jump on the opportunity, who was willing to jump in with both feet." Let's take a look at Ephesians chapter 4. God has huge responsibilities in mind for his saints in the future, but with that comes a responsibility on his part to make sure that we've been trained right and that we have grown and shown, proven that we're going to follow. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 22, and in quite a few places in Scripture, it speaks of this, you know, this whole concept of remove this thing, which is sin, from your life, and put in this thing. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 22, he says, put off your old conduct, the conduct that you used to have, which is corrupt according to the deceitfulness of lust, and again, be renewed in the spirit of mind, and put on the new man, which is created in righteousness according to God and in true holiness. So again, it's a matter of putting away the deeds, the sinful deeds, the selfish deeds, the prideful, the ones that were motivated by selfishness, motivated by self-interest, and putting on these deeds that Jesus himself exemplified, showing concern for others, showing acts of love. In verse 28, it says, let him that stole, steal no more. Well, stealing takes a lot of effort. Stealing, you gotta case the house, you gotta plan, you gotta say, okay, when's the best time to get there? I was reading in, I think it was Job 22 this morning, and it was talking just about that, about, you know, the people who case the joint, if you will, and look for when's the best time, and they always go in at night, and there's a lot of effort involved in being a good thief, a successful thief. A lot of planning, a lot of work involved in that. It's not just, oh, I was walking by and there's some bag of gold, I'm going to pick it up. Well, why am I mentioning all this? Well, because all of that time that this person used to spend planning, okay, how am I going to take advantage of that person? How am I going to get away with this next caper? All of that energy that was spent needs to be redirected. All of the time, all of the energy, all of that. The scripture calls it worldly wisdom. There's a certain wisdom in that, in knowing just how to twist and get advantage. And that needs to be redirected. Because if all of a sudden I'm not spending those several hours a day trying to figure out how to get away with that, what am I going to spend my time on? Well, God tells us how to redirect our energies, and he's there to help us. He's there to help us. Verse 28 continues, basically says, take that time, take that energy, take that effort that you've been using to be a thief, and work. Work with your hands in what is good, so that you will have resources to give to your neighbor who's in need. Redirect your energies. God will be there to help us. In verse 29, it says, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth. Okay, I just took something out of my day's activities. What's going to fill that gap? Well, the second half of verse 29. Use your mouth to building up others, to be praising, to be encouraging, to be uplifting, to be building. And a few verses later, I'm just going to look ahead to chapter 5 and verse 4. It mentions the mouth again. It says, never mind the filthy humor, the foolish talking, the joking around, which are not suitable, but rather use your mouth for giving thanks. So again, here's what to take out. Giving thanks, there's what to put in. It's a matter of tuning our minds in to God's way of life. At the end of chapter 4 of Ephesians, in verse 31, again, it talks about stop bitterness, stop wrath, stop anger, stop arguments, stop, you know, slandering people, stop insulting people, stop gossiping, stop lying. And in verse 32, that's what you put in. Instead of this, verse 32 says, be kind to one another, be tender-hearted, forgive one another, take these poisonous character traits out of your life and put in their place character traits that reveal God's way of life. So again, there's always, all through our spiritual walk, there's going to be this process of we're taking this thing out, we're putting that thing in, we're asking God to help us as we learn, as we grow. And of course, when God shows us something and we latch onto it, and we take it and we run with it, kind of like the servant who was given the 10 talents, he looks at us and he's pleased, and he knows that it is safe to give us a little more truth, to give us a little more understanding, so that we can continue to be growing, to be changing. Again, not that we're perfect, but that he declares us righteous as we commit and stay committed to letting him change our lives. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, we are told to not be conformed to the world. The world has all these terrible character traits that we saw in the Ten Commandments: the murdering, the lying, the stealing, the adultery. We are warned to not be conformed to the world, but to allow ourselves to be transformed as God renews our mind. He says that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God, so that you can be that good example that, again, somebody will see at some point in the future and say, as we heard in the first message, I knew there was something special about that individual. The world has a certain way of doing things, and God's family, God and Jesus the Christ, have a certain way of doing things, and we're supposed to be changing from the one to the other. In Romans chapter 2, in verse 28, it's a contrast between what's on the outside, what's visible, and what's for real. What's really there on the inside. In Romans chapter 2 and verse 28, Paul says, he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, neither is the circumcision, neither is that circumcision which is outwardly in the flesh, but he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and the circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit and not in the letter. And then the kicker is this last phrase, whose praise is of men and not of God. Because that outward show of, well, I'm doing this and I know everything, and that's the person who's looking for the praise of men. But who is one who is a Jew inwardly, who has that circumcision in their heart, is receiving praise from God. And so we need to make sure that we, again, always sort of change and bring our focus back to, are we yielding to God? Are we letting His standards become our standards? I'm just going to turn briefly back to Romans chapter 12. He was speaking of gifts. In verse 6 of Romans chapter 12, we all have different gifts according to the grace that is given us. And he says, well, maybe it's teaching, maybe it's ministering, which would be serving, basically. When it says ministry here, it means serving. Maybe it's teaching, maybe it's encouraging. Maybe it's simply that you're a generous person. Verse 8, he talks about, he that gives, let him do it with sincerity. He that rules, let him do it with diligence. Because as it says in verse 9, our actions need to be motivated from love and not from some sort of a selfish underpinning. James has a little bit of something to say about what should I be doing if I want to hear God's approval. In James chapter 1 and verse 27, he speaks a little bit about what should we be doing. How is it that we can have behavior that God approves of? So in James 1 and verse 27, he says, pure religion. So again, not the outward, not the superficial kind of religion, but the actual internalized religion. And if you wish to be considered undefiled in God's eyes, God the Father, visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. That's a do. That's a positive. Visit, serve, love, and keep himself unspotted from the world. And that's, again, more of a negative. Stay away from what's bad. Keep yourself unspotted from the world. And instead of that, take care of one another. Show love for one another. Do these things that help us to become knit together as a family. So all throughout the Bible, we see examples of out with the bad and in with the good. I'm not going to turn to 1 Corinthians 13, but you're familiar with that chapter where he says, if I give my body to be burned, but I'm not doing it out of an attitude of love, it's not going to profit me anything. If I know everything, know all prophetic secrets, but again, God's love isn't a part of me, then it doesn't profit me anything. And we don't want to be just spinning our wheels. We don't want to be confronted at some later date with the knowledge that we were not doing what was right. Please turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, and we'll start in verse 34. Again, this is when Jesus is separating those who did see the truth, who did obey his word, who did follow a way of life that he showed himself. He's separating them from those who just maybe had a superficial religion, from those who did not truly get it, did not truly follow. So in verse 34, he says, then will the king say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. These blessed, why are they blessed? Well, because again, they were exhibiting God's love in their lifetime. Not the best love that they could gin up in themselves, but the kind of love that only comes when we allow God to work in us and to change us. They were acting as his eyes, his ears, his hands. They were acting as, they had their ears open. They had their eyes open. What can I do to help? Who is it that's down? Who is it that is in need? They were acting as guys, as God's rather, eyes and his ears and his hands. They were actively looking so that they would know, where are the needs? Where can I help? Where can you put me to use, Father? And they gave of their time and their resources. Because in verse 35 it says, I was hungry and you gave me meat. And again, we know that he explains later on that somebody in one of the brethren was hungry and you gave them meat. And I took that as though you had given me meat. Somebody among you was thirsty and you gave them a drink. Somebody among you didn't have a place to stay that night and you took him in. They needed clothes. They were in the hospital. You visited them. They were in prison and you visited them. That's a pretty big commitment to go and visit a prison. I haven't had opportunity to do that, but the paperwork you have to fill out and the hoops you have to go through and yet some of our brethren do that on a regular basis. They want to be that help. They look for the need. They ask, where's the need? And then they seek God's help to fulfill that need. Turn to one last passage in Luke chapter 12. And let's take a look at verse 47. Luke chapter 12 and verse 47. And this goes to a little bit of what was mentioned in the first message in terms of God holds us accountable when we know. He doesn't hold us accountable for every law that we didn't know about when he was first working with our minds. Verse 47, he says, that servant which knew what was expected of him by his Lord, but didn't do it, and didn't get ready for his return, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that didn't know, even though he may have done the exact same offenses, if that person was going out and having the ham sandwich, if you will, but they didn't know that that was prohibited by God. He that knew not and committed things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask that much more. So again, it goes back to the parable of the talents. To give your servant 10 talents was just literally a pile of wealth. Entrusted with much, much was expected. But who is there in the whole world that has been given more than you and I? Who in the world has been given more than what God has given you and I? It's said that nature abhors a vacuum. Any vacuum that exists will be filled. Each of us is to be, with God's guidance, rooting sin out of our lives. But again, as we take something out, we're supposed to be replacing it with righteous deeds, replacing sinful habits with godly habits. We do need to keep God's laws. We know that they are commanded. They haven't been suspended or done away with. But they're just the beginning of what God requires. So if we will allow God to work in us and allow him to change us, again, like the verse read a while ago, being transformed, if we will allow him to transform us, we will become what he wants. We will become instruments of his love. Again, an extension of his own hands, an extension of his own eyes and ears and his own will. Instruments of his love. So again, we started out maybe, a lot of people start out causing harm. You know, maybe in their younger life they lived a crazy life and they did things that they now regret. Maybe that wasn't your experience. Maybe some other people in the past can be uncaring or they can just be neglectful. Well, yeah, that person is, they probably have plenty of people visiting them. I don't need to go visit that person. Sort of taking a neutral position. But if we let God work through us, we're going to be taking it from neutral into the positive realm, actively serving, actively showing God's love for all of his kids. And as it says up the page in verse 43, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing.